Hell yeah, Corn Fed Podcast, baby. Let's fucking go.
Let's fucking go.
Let's fucking go.
Let's fucking go.
Whoop whoop.
Welcome back to the Corn Fed Podcast for episode 5, I believe. I am your co-host, Cayenne Rainwater, she, her, and I am here with
Jazz, your other co-host, and
am
our
I
very
illustrious,
illustrious guest.
Hi, I'm Brandy.
You are illustrious.
If you're invited on here, you're illustrious as fuck. Right. I don't. What are you? What kind of
those
question
are the
is
rules?
That?
You have to be illustrious to be a guest on the pod. Stay notwithstanding.
I don't.
I'm all. I'm still laughing from the fuck up. From like 5 minutes.
And this is round 2 of us trying to record the intro. So.
See, I.
Today.
You guys really twisted my arm to get on this podcast, and I'm already fucking up. So don't say I didn't warn you.
We are joined by, because we are covering $3 Bill, y'all, by Limp Bizkit, and we are joined by a Jacksonville native, just like Limp Bizkit. So that's why we really wanted her on this episode after trying to get her on the White Pony episode last time. And we just kind of want to find out what the fuck is happening in Jacksonville that gives birth to Limp Bizkit.
You know, well, first of all, Jacksonville is the largest city landwise in the U.S., which means that there are so many different pockets of, I don't know, different lifestyles. Like, I was trying to figure out where Limp Bizkit lived, but I couldn't find anything in my research. And, like, Fred Durst is old enough to be my dad, so he's a little before my time. I think he has, like, a 28-year-old daughter, like, or maybe 29. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, if you drive, you know, you can drive to the beach, you can drive to the suburbs. There's a college there. There are a bunch of rednecks. It's very diverse in that way. And yet Limp Bizkit is our hometown hero.
As it should be, honestly. I mean, listen, as they said in Indigo Flow on this album, Jacksonville, it's on the map.
Yeah, sure. Yes.
Okay. I feel like just so separated from,
yeah, I have no idea what it's like there,
what Jacksonville is, because but I feel like there's such a special place in my heart for it anyway. I think,
yeah, absolutely.
I think speaks like to the power
Ohio
of Jacksonville.
Is that because of Limp Bizkit, or
yeah, because here's the thing, Limp Bizkit might be from Jacksonville. Limp Bizkit is the most Ohio band that's ever existed in the world.
All right, yeah, I can agree to that.
Yeah, you spent enough time in Ohio, you know, Brandy.
Yeah, 5 days was plenty of time to make that connection.
I mean, how many times did we make you listen to I Want to Talk About Me by Toby Keith while you were here?
Oh, God, you know what? And then I voluntarily, like, listened to it while Jay and I were at the Airbnb because the video was so good.
It is. It's amazing.
It's so good.
Which does tie into, I think, I don't want to, like, lead off with this because I want to talk about the album a little bit before, but, like, it does tie into the fact that, like, this album is really, really fun and has great riffs and everything. And it's also, as much as I enjoy it and listen to it, it is deeply, deeply misogynist.
Yeah, I haven't listened to this album in full, and I don't know. It's been years and years and years. And while musically, I think it's actually pretty surprisingly innovative, the lyrics are atrocious and make me cringe for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I listened to this album, I would say, I've been listening to it, I probably listened to it like 10 times since we decided that we were going to do this episode. But before that, I would say I probably listened to it like once or twice a month. And like, as much fun as I have, like the riffs are incredible and everything, it is yeah, there's a lot of stuff on here that's just like, wow. I mean, like, you know, I think it's, is it Sour? I think opens with Psycho Female blowing up my phone line. It's just like, ooh, I already know what I'm getting into here.
Yeah.
I feel like, can we talk about how Fred Durst is a pioneer of mask off culture, calling women females culture? Really, he was ahead of the curve. Fred Durst is the future.
But yeah, I guess like I feel like we should maybe just talk about the album like objectively for a second, maybe before we like delve super heavy into this, because I feel like talking about Fred Durst's misogyny and our analysis of it is probably going to take up like a ton of the pod. So so I guess like just like Brandy, like you said, it is really surprisingly extremely innovative and really doesn't, I mean, Limp Bizkit doesn't really sound like any other band, which is nuts for how popular they were at one point.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I'm coming in from 2020.
I can't believe you never listened to Limp Bizkit before this, as a side note. Because we were just talking about our backgrounds with it, and I guess we should still, yeah. But like, wow. Because you don't really have one with it.
I feel like, okay, so I feel like growing up, I was really like a tomboy because I wasn't comfortable with like femininity for some reason. Don't really know why. I mean, I kind of know why. But anyway, when I was like 10,
okay,
I pivoted to emo very hard. So anything that happened in that space that was like kind of grungy and boy-y, like I did not really engage with. So Limp Bizkit was just like not my sensibilities, I guess. But anyway, it's something about Limp Bizkit just always, even the name sounds so boyish to me. Like it just sounds like a boy eating sand and being mean. But anyway, so the bass, so can we talk about the bass in this album?
My Bluetooth,
it's incredible,
fucked up, and so sometimes when I would listen to it, it'll just like cut out and like the bass frequencies get like way amplified. So like the bass lines on this album for the past like week and a half, 2 weeks or whatever, I've just been listening to them constantly because my Bluetooth speaker will cut out. And I'm just like, these are insanely good bass lines.
That sounds like the ideal way to listen to it, Kai.
Yeah, just cut out Fred Durst completely.
Yeah. Truthfully. What is it, the last song that's just like 16 minutes long? Just like music like and no Fred Durst. Like I thought about that
a little bit because like I think that song shows how, because Limp Bizkit gets extremely maligned in modern like music journalism, where people always talk about how like they're like one of the worst bands ever, blah blah blah. And I think it really goes to show that like that song specifically really shows how it's really just Fred Durst that gave them that that reputation, because objectively speaking, every other member of the band is massively talented. I mean, Wes Borland wrote some of the greatest riffs that I've ever heard in my life. I mean, on this album, like Counterfeit is incredible in terms of guitar. Sour, Stuck, the Leech demo is also like incredible. The production is unbelievable as well. It's really like this extremely talented group of musicians, which I've said this before, that Fred Durst is one of the smartest people in music because he is kind of garbage and just managed to surround himself with these people who are insanely talented.
I don't know. It was so weird. Like I tried really hard to like not overanalyze, I guess, like his sound or his lyricism, because it's bad. But it's crazy because he gets really close to sounding cool, and then like says something so dumb, like, right after, that I'm like, people thought this was, like, really cool at the time. Like, I want to say it's Duck, where he's, like, really, he's, like, 20 seconds into sounding really cool, and then he says Duck, Duck, Goose, and he loses me, like, immediately.
He, like, can't stop himself, is the thing. It's, like, it's not on this album, but on Significant Other, on the song Rearrange, it's, like, this, like, really great, like, closest thing to serious, like, actual good lyricism that Limp Bizkit ever had. And then towards the end, he, like, has this, like, incredible part where he's just, like, you think that everybody is the same. I don't think that anybody is like you. And then it cuts out, and he's just, like, just think about it. You'll get it. And it's, like, tough. He, like, can't stop himself from being a dipshit. It's honestly amazing. Yeah, it is.
It's cringy. It's like, I don't know. It's what I honestly don't know if there was other white rappers doing it before him. But I could think about was, like, Lyrical Miracle hip hop, and yeah. Like, I'm like, is this what birthed that? Is this what happened? But I don't know, because Lyrical Miracle Hip Hop, like, prides itself on being intelligent. Even though it's, like,
I mean,
not
I'll
cool,
say this,
you know,
Rigorous is a better rapper than Eminem.
Yeah. Not that we had an Eminem demographic, but if we did, like,
God,
we just went like, always with the hot takes. Oh my God.
Might be the spiciest thing anyone's ever said.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, like,
I have to support
musically,
it.
This album is fucking nuts. Like, there's a reason that I listen to it so much, and it's because it is just, I mean, it's fun. Like, the riffs are insane, and the bass lines are incredible. The drumming is really good. The sampling and, like, the turntable use is actually, like, probably the best use of turntables in nu metal. I mean, well, yes, my bad.
Outside of Linkin Park, you mean?
I mean, like, the production is incredible, and honestly, like, Fred Durst, like, if you ignore what he's actually saying, he's, like, a fun vocalist. Like, if you to what the words actually mean, it's,
yeah,
it's really fun to, like, rap and scream along to. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I can't tell you in the time that we've been, how many, literally every day that I've driven to work, I've been listening to this album as I drive to work, and, like, it's, like, fucking, like, 6:50 in the morning, and I'm just, like, screaming, in my car, just, like, you're a fool. Like,
I just think that it's so funny that Folklore dropped the same week that I'm supposed to be listening to this, because it was like a trash sandwich. Like, I would listen to $3 Bills, and then I would listen to The Meat Folklore, like, four times in a row. And then I would listen to $3 Bills again, and it was very jarring.
At one point during this podcast, I'm 100% sure that I will call it $3 Bill Y'all instead of $3 Bill Y'all. And I've Mandela affected my way into thinking that that's actually what it's called. My whole life, I've just, like, constantly thought that it was $3 Bill Y'all, because that rolls off the tongue way better than $3 Bill Y'all.
Yeah, I actually thought it was that too because of you, and then was really confused when I finally looked at the spelling.
I always thought that's how it was. And even though I've listened to this album relatively frequently since I was, like, 14 years old, it's like, but yeah, I guess, like, so Jazz, you've never listened to this until we decided to do it, right?
No, I think that I've only listened, the only Limp Bizkit song I've ever heard was Break Stuff, and I wasn't, like, paying attention to it, but they say Break Stuff a lot, so it's not hard to remember.
Just give me something quick. Brandy, what's your background?
So I remember when my stepfather bought this album because, sorry, not this album, but Hot Dog Flavored Water.
Oh, yeah.
Because the cover was so disturbing to my 8 or 9 year old mind. And he would listen to it constantly along with Linkin Park, and I'm trying to think of what other garbage things. He also introduced me to like New Order and Nine Inch Nails. So even though he's a total piece of shit and tried to burn our house down, I got to thank him for getting me into nu metal at the age of like 8.
This is the most nu metal background to have.
Yeah, you know, hating my trashy alcoholic stepfather, but at least he got me into Limp Bizkit. But yeah, I don't know. Nu metal, I mean, obviously being from Jacksonville, I don't know. Nu metal is just in our blood. I got to be honest, I have not spent much time with $3 Bill, y'all. So listening to this for the first time in years was definitely shocking.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, Fred Durst, I don't know. I think about bands like Deftones and how like nonsensical their lyrics can be sometimes. And even like Tool, who Limp Bizkit has cited as inspiration for some of the songs on this album. Like, it's just like Fred Durst is working well with the music, but he just has really bad taste. So where Chino was writing, you know, what he thought Robert Smith was saying, Fred Durst has nothing good to draw on, which is why I think the lyrics are just so Neanderthal and misogynistic.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, my background is mostly just friends, like, you know, listening to Limp Bizkit a lot when I was growing up. And I was like, oh, you know, this is kind of fun. Like, I'll listen to this. And then it just kind of became like almost like in a weird way, like comfort music of like, this is something I grew up listening to, like it's fun, like I can just listen to it whenever. And it, I mean, it does kind of rock. Like, if you like, as everything positive that we're gonna say about this album comes with like the asterisk of like, if you ignore what Fred Durst says.
Absolutely.
I did have a lot of fun listening to this, especially afterwards. Yeah. I'm like extremely pissed off. and also I don't know if I've talked about this before. I don't see why I would have, because it has no relevance, but I live like 20 minutes in California time, like driving away from my job. So that makes me very angry all the time, constantly. And you know how 20 minutes if you're driving fast is not the same as 20 minutes if you're stop and go? Yeah. So the entire way home is stop and go, because the town that my job is in is like nobody can drive. I don't know why. Like, it's super cursed, but it drives me insane. And I will listen to this and other angry stuff on my way home.
Hell yeah. Yeah. No, it is just like a great like album to listen to when you're just like pissed off, because it's just, it is really hateful in a way. I mean, it does have it, as much as I'm going to talk shit on Fred Durst's lyricism, it does have maybe the greatest line ever, which is just a complete disregard for mental health. But when he says, you know, because you're sick of yourself, well, I'm sick of you too. Like, that's incredible. Like, just an all-time great lyric. That's just so, so brutal. but, oh my God. No, it is really a great album to listen to when you're pissed off, because it's heavy and it's kind of fun and, like, it's just... And it was like what we were talking about with Battle of Los Angeles, where there's really no moment on this album where it like dips in energy. Like, the whole thing is like on 10 the entire time, except for, you know, the last song, which is obviously kind of like it's almost like a cool down after a workout. But like the rest of it is just, I mean, you're constantly just being like bombarded with like, you know, noise and, you know, really fun riffs and screaming and all that. There's not really any downtime on this record.
I like a lot of the drops, like, because there's a lot of like funky 30 to 40 minute, I mean second sections with like funky bass and stuff, and then it drops into like a heavy moment, which I kept wishing like I knew the songs so I could like go ham with him, but I didn't know the songs. So, once I got a little bit more comfortable with Counterfeit, like, I listened to like a million times.
Absolutely, that's the best song on the record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. but yeah, so once I got more comfortable with that one, I was singing along, but like the whole time I kept wishing that I knew the lyrics so I could start yelling
just,
and stuff.
It's really fun because like just the way that he just like kind of like raps something and then just like starts screaming is really, really fun to sing along to in the car, honestly.
Fred Durst.
I think he's the second hottest guy in nu metal.
Wait, what? Really?
After Chino. Okay. Chino is obviously the hottest guy in nu metal. I'm going to also put a caveat on this. I'm a lesbian. I don't really have much. My taste in what I'm saying is attractive is just like, it's not going to be accurate at all for anybody.
I was like, this is really more for Brandy, but you know,
okay, I definitely agree with Chino as number one. I would say number two is Chester Bennington.
Chester's my number one.
He looks boring to me. Chino's my number two.
So,
really?
Yeah, he just kind of looks like a generic guy. My number two, I actually think if Fred Durst was going to be unseated as number two, I think it would be Jonathan Davis because he kind of looks like a rat.
Okay, stop talking.
This is the episode where everybody stops listening because they realize how dog shit my taste is.
I had to look up Fred Durst's height, and he is 5'8" according to Google, and Jonathan Davis is 6'2". So,
wait, what? Jonathan Davis is 6'2"?
Apparently.
Holy shit.
Here's the thing. Jonathan Davis is hotter, but I would not have screamed if she hadn't added that he looks like a rat.
I did not. So.
That's not why he's hotter.
Oh my God. Westmoreland is the hottie of Limp Bizkit, obviously.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I would agree with that.
I don't know what anyone in Limp Bizkit looks like
Wes
except for
Borland looks. He's like the most like. I'm agreeing with Brandy because he's just the most like generically like stereotypically attractive member, I think. Also, he wore a ton of weird makeup when they played, which is cool to me. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. I would agree with that. Okay, so the reason that I asked this question, because this is important, this is journalism, is because when I made the poll about whether Fred Durst dated Britney Spears or Christina Aguilera or both or neither, some people are stupid, I guess, because they said neither, but many people vote, like, it was pretty even across the board. So what is the, like, final decision? Did he date both?
I think he may have slept with both. I don't know about dating. That seems like a very, I don't know. That seems too committal for Britney and Christina, but I think they definitely like hooked up.
I'm 100% sure that he dated Britney. I know that Britney says that they didn't, but listen, I would deny if I dated Fred Durst too. So I get it.
I think he's hot. Like visually, not as a person, you know. I know for a fact that guys that looked like that at the time.
Have you guys seen his tattoos? So. Like actually looked at them?
Man, if you have money, you shouldn't have such dog shit tattoos.
They're really bad. I was watching some music videos today to get prepped for this podcast, and I never noticed the like giant hibiscus flower he has on the back of his neck.
It's awful.
It's so bad, which then made me like look up Fred Durst tattoos, and apparently he was a tattoo artist before he became the lead singer of Limp Bizkit. Yeah, and he, I mean, this is based on like Korn Wiki or something, but someone on this article said that he tattooed at Inksmith and Rogers in Jacksonville, Florida, which is a really like well-renowned shop in the tattoo industry. So I don't really know how valid that is, but if that's true, that's really wild.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I do know really good tattoo artists who have dog shit tattoos. So like it could match up.
I want to see a Fred Durst tattoo though. Like I want to see a tattoo that he has put on someone's body. Yeah.
I'm putting getting tattooed by Fred Durst on my bucket list. But what were you saying?
Oh god, I forget what I was saying. It probably doesn't matter. It was something about Fred Durst tattoos, but whatever. But yeah, this album, I guess like we can get real into it now. Like this album is deeply, deeply, and honestly, it's actually maybe not as bad as Significant Other, which is like insane that you could get more misogynist than this. But this album is like deeply, deeply misogynist, right? Like to the point that it's some, like as a woman, it's uncomfortable to listen to for me at times. I mean, yeah, as fun as it is, like it's really hateful. And I think like one of the things that I kind of wanted to bring up and talk about was the way that like it's interesting to analyze this kind of as like power structures, because like this is deeply misogynist, and a lot of the things that Fred Durst is talking about are not justified because of the way the power structures work. He has more power over these women than they do over him. Whereas like you compare it to an artist like Lingua Ignota talking about, you know, like obviously like she has songs about much different things, but she has some songs that are about similar things where it's like, it works because the power structure is against her. And that's like kind of the difference here. You know what I mean? Like when Fred Durst is talking about like somebody like taking advantage of him or whatever, it's like because he expects women to just kind of be at his beck and call. And when they're not, that's him being taken advantage of. Whereas, you know, when it's like a woman talking about it, it's not us expecting men to be at our beck and call. If you're, you know, if you're a woman who's attracted to men or, you know, any sort of significant other that you have, like, it's more so about being like, it's at best even, and at worst like stacked against you. And so it's actually like justified in our case, whereas like for Fred Durst, it never is, because he's like a rich dude.
Yeah, you're like, what happened to you? Like, why are you this mad? Like, who hurt you? You know, when I listened to.
Yeah, that's how I felt too. Like a lot of
I obviously don't know his life, so I don't know if there was like a specific person that made him that angry.
Yeah.
I gotta say, Kyan, you're probably the only person to ever put Lingua Ignota and Limp Bizkit in the same sentence.
But like she was the first artist I could think of, but I'm sure there's like other examples of like, you know, like women talking about being scorned by men and stuff like that. And it usually is justified in their case because once like I said, you know, like I don't know if there's a specific person that hurt him or anything, but like it ties into the fact that like no matter what, he is still coming at this from like a very privileged perspective. Whereas like for women, any sort of, you know, like woman scorned kind of narrative is usually justified because we are consistently like actually taken advantage of it, and we don't have the power that men do.
Yeah. And I think about like a really big example that I kept thinking about, and maybe it's because of Naya Rivera's passing very recently. But I kept thinking about that song, I Don't Fuck With You, which by Big Sean. which anyone who knows the lore knows it's about Naya Rivera. Yeah. And I remember, like, not, it's a fun song, but obviously it's really hateful.
Yeah.
But it was like a moment. That's not Big Sean's, like, definitive. We don't associate Big Sean with hating women. We associate Fred Durst with hating women. That is his entire career.
I mean, like, Limp Bizkit's most famous song is probably Nookie. If it might be Roland, but Nookie is at least in the top two, if not top three. But, like, and that song is entirely about hating women, really. You know, but it is, like, an interesting kind of analysis of the power dynamic, I think, where this stuff just seems so trivial and petty and bullshit, because it is, because none of these people actually really did anything to Fred Durst's life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, all they did was turn him down on a date and whatever. I don't fucking care. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's not really an event that would justify an entire career of hating women. Yeah. That's obviously like a lifestyle, something that was in like bred into him, which I don't know. It's really like, I don't know. It like irritates me so much, because I would like to think that if I were born a straight, hot, white, affluent male, that I would just do something else. Like, I would just enjoy it. I know I wouldn't, because the whole, if you're born into privilege, you're terrible. It rots you. But like, I feel like, why can't they just, like, surf or something? Like,
right? Just like,
paint.
Anything else. Like, if I was born, like, a rich, white, affluent male, like, I would just be, like, I would just be hanging out. You know, I'd play video games all the time or something. I don't know.
Like, why do you have to have an enemy? Isn't it, like, cool that you don't?
Right, like, that's the thing, is, like, you would think that, I think it's, like, this thing of, like, everybody kind of, like, wants to be, it's funny because, you know, this argument is, I think, frequently leveraged at actual oppressed people, where they're, like, everybody just wants to be a victim, and that's not true for oppressed people, it is true for fucking, like, white, like, cishet men.
Yeah.
Where, like, they really, like, those are the people who actually want to be victims. Specifically affluent ones, because obviously, you know, poor people have struggles all over. But like, those are the people who just like want to be victims. And so that's, I think, like what Fred Durst is struggling with, where he's just like, I want to hate somebody and like, I want to be like a victim and I don't have any. So I'm just going to hate on these women. But that's kind of at least my viewpoint on it.
Brandy, you there?
Yes, I'm there. I'm just, I've never really looked at it that way, Cayenne. I mean, now that you've explained it, I totally get it. But I think, like, I don't know, I feel like daily, even though I think of myself as, like, really progressive and always learning and undoing, like, what has been ingrained in us, like, I, you know, growing up in, like, the hardcore scene and, like, listening to nu metal and all of these male fronted genres of music and subcultures, like, a lot of times, like, I think it's easy for me as, like, I wouldn't say I'm angry, but like, I am definitely like empathetic to someone's hatred, and I respect like their use of their art as a form of expression. So a lot of times I would just dismiss, I wouldn't say dismiss, I would definitely recognize the misogyny in, you know, in Limp Bizkit, or like, I don't know, a band like Glassjaw, who has like really violent lyrics towards women as like, I don't know, it's just a form of expression. I don't agree with it, but I don't, I understand the place that it comes from. And like, I just hope that it's not actually like implemented. So it's really interesting to hear that in comparison to like you noted, going Noda, to like frame that and have a better understanding of it.
Yeah, I definitely think that like that like kind of violent expression, but I also think that like, you know, in comparison, I think there's plenty of artists that are able to express, you know, like aggression and hatred and stuff without explicitly framing it against women in the way that, you know, like Limp Bizkit does, or, you know, specifically to this episode. Because, I mean, like, another band that I'm sure we will 100% cover very soon, like Slipknot, you know, doesn't have any outwardly misogynist lyrics that I can think of off top, but are maybe one of the most, like, angry, like, hateful bands, or, like, outside of the nu metal genre, you know, like Electric Wizard or I Hate God. Well, I Hate God isn't a good example because they have a couple, but most of their stuff isn't. But, you know, bands like that, I mean, I think there's plenty of avenues that people can take that don't rely on projecting their anger onto women who they are probably actually the aggressors towards in most circumstances. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, I can't say that, you know, completely, you know, like 100% sure, but just analyzing how things typically work, I'm guessing that's most of the case. And especially on this album, you know, most of the lyrics that he has towards women are just like, you led me on, or you took my money, or something like that. You know what I mean? It's like, that's not an actual valid critique. There are plenty of things to be actually mad about that don't lead you towards misogyny and, you know, putting people who are actually at risk into a position of vulnerability and a position of being the hated. Nine Inch Nails is another great example. You know, like, even like, if you want to write something about, or what I was talking about with Nine Inch Nails, like, if you were, if you want to write something about, you know, like a relationship going bad, like, Nine Inch Nails, I think, does a good job of actually turning that into like an introspective thing and kind of being like, what did I fuck up? Like, what was incompatible between us? What were the things that didn't work? Is this my fault at all? Whereas Fred Durst does this thing where he's just kind of like, this is her fault. She's a fucking bitch.
You know what has been kind of rattling around in my mind about both what Brandy said and about just the growing up in, like, you know, I don't know what year it was when you guys were listening to this type of music, but it was 2001 for me. Mm-hmm. I was listening to this album, $3 Bill Yells, and like trying to place it in that era of like culture.
Yeah.
And one was surprised by how not homophobic it was.
Yeah. It's also very surprising.
Right? I was like, so that I think highlights even more to me how much Fred Durst just hates women. because time when it was like perfectly okay to be homophobic on the radio and in your songs, especially for like more aggressive type people. But something that was really striking me was, you know, I didn't grow up with Limp Bizkit, but I did grow up with Eminem. Like, this was the time when I had Eminem posters and 50 Cent posters all over my bedroom, and like that's all I listen to, and, you know, watch their music videos and stuff. And Eminem obviously also hates women. One of my favorite things to do is try to picture Eminem dating someone. Having a girlfriend and like showing up with flowers and stuff. Like, I don't know why, but that just like cracks me up. It's like impossible. It's like a dog walking around on its hind legs. But anyway, similar to what Brandy was saying, when I was 9, I wasn't like angry at Eminem for being like talking about murdering his wife and his mom on every single song. And it's not something obviously that I allow now. Like, I can barely listen to Eminem now, even stuff that I really liked when I was younger, because I'm just like, wow, this dude really fucking hates women. Oh. But at the time, I don't know why. I don't know what it, maybe just because it was more normal. Like, if misogyny was so like normal in music at the time, not that it's not now, but it's definitely changed. Like, culture has changed, but yeah I kind of see where you're coming from, Brandy.
Yeah, because and like, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm taking a holier than thou stance at all, because I same kind of thing. I loved Odd Future when I was around that age, because Odd Future was what, like 2008 through like 2014 or something like that, give or take. And I was into them like pretty much the whole time. And obviously they were, you know, violently misogynistic and had lots of horrorcore, you know, like, they talked about like sexual assault and stuff like that in a very flippant kind of.
Protect Hayley Williams. Sorry.
Yeah, but like, we talked about like really, you know, like sexual assault and like things like that in a very flippant, disgusting manner. If it wasn't, it was at best flippant and at worst like outwardly targeted towards people. So like, yeah, I'm definitely not trying to, you know, take anything like that, but it is interesting, like you were saying, how that kind of, it does show that like, as much as things were accepted back then, it shows that he actually didn't really, like, he wasn't just being edgy, he actually just hated women. Like, because if he just wanted to be edgy, he could have done, like you said, you know, like, it wasn't uncommon to be homophobic or transphobic or racist even at that time and still get on the radio. And he could have been, and he wasn't. He just actually hates women.
Yeah. Well, I think that's like a pattern with it. And I guess I'm not sorry to keep bringing Eminem into this, but
like honestly, like comparable artists.
Yeah. Like there's what else do you even like when you think about Eminem's music, what else do you think about other than he hates his mom and his wife? And women probably, and loves his daughter.
Yeah, that's well, and the song "Till I Collapse."
I don't know. I know the song, but I don't know the lyrics enough to know what you're referring to.
Oh, I'm not referring to anything. I'm just referring to the fact that was in like every commercial for like years.
Yeah, but then he like made that song with Rihanna about like. Domestic abuse.
Oh, and yeah. I'm just like, I forgot about that.
Like, what the fuck is it? Very complicated person, in a disgusting kind of way. But anyway, yeah, like their careers are built on their ideology, and their ideology just happens to be like, I hate women.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like what you were talking about with the Rihanna song with Eminem, I think also kind of plays into Limp Bizkit in the sense that like the moments that they're doing something that seems like it's actually like, can't think of the right word, but like it's not really playing into that is, I think it feeds into their kind of grotesque view that like, this is something that I can monetize on. Like, I think like Eminem made that song because he was like, I can monetize on like being emotional. And I think that like Limp Bizkit made, you know, like I think they made a lot of their music with the idea of like, this is something that will make us money. In this kind of way, like, I mean, even the cover of Faith, you know, I think
that's what I was thinking about. Yeah. I
think that was like very calculated, and I think that was like very much like Fred Durst's move of being like, well, this will get people talking about us, you know, it doesn't matter.
It's like a fake softening of the image.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. It's like giving people like this idea of like, oh, well, you know, they can actually be soft. They can actually be emotional. And it's like, no, this is just kind of a calculated ploy to make you think that so that they can continue to be like the violent misogynists that they are without being critiqued.
Right. I do like that Faith cover though.
Oh, it's like here's the thing, everything that we're talking shit about, I love this album. Like I said, I listen to it like one or two times a month. Like massive critical support.
That's like the crux of being a new metal fan, I think.
Oh, absolutely. We still have a while before we get to our next album, but that ties into what we're gonna discuss what album we're gonna cover next. But yeah, so like Brandy, what do you think about that kind of stuff? I guess like you've been kind of quiet.
I know, sorry, I'm new to the podcast game. This will be my first and only one, I think. I would like to go back to what you said about them covering Faith, because I never really thought about it as calculated, but when I think about like the tender moments of Limp Bizkit, which is a very short list, I think about their cover of The Who's Behind Blue Eyes that they did for Gothica, and it makes sense. Amazing. It makes sense to me that they're choosing these covers, you know, to masquerade as like, oh, like Fred Durst has feelings, like maybe they aren't this like loud violent band all the time, but you know, he didn't write that music. So Yeah, I never thought about it in that regard.
Yeah, well, and that kind of ties into something that we said earlier about like how, again, it's not on $3 bill, y'all, but on Rearranged, on Significant Other, I made kind of a goof on it earlier where I said, you know, he can't bring himself to be serious for too long because he has to ruin that song by being just like, just think about it, you'll get it. And I think that like really shows that like, I think that song, as much as I love it, like it's one of my favorite nu metal songs ever. I do think it was calculated to exactly like you said, Brandy, like show like the sensitive Fred Durst, or he's not the violent misogynist, you know, he's this guy who has feelings. And I don't really think that's true. I think that those showings are very much calculated.
Yeah. And now I'm thinking about like, I wonder, you know, this is hypothetical and none of us could give this a straight answer, but you mentioned how, you know, it is surprising how there is no homophobia or transphobia in Limp Bizkit's music in a time where that was very prevalent. But I wonder if he felt that he had been wronged by a trans person or a gay person, like how that would affect his music, because it seems like, I don't know, he probably honestly has never really encountered a lot of that. Like, you know, Jacksonville is in Florida, but it's very much Southern. So I wonder like how that would change his lyrics. Like maybe he would hate other people and be more than misogynistic if he had those experiences. But, you know, like we said, his lyrics are, I don't know, simpleton at best. there are no nuances. There are no metaphors. It's very straightforward. So I wonder like what those sort of experiences, how they would affect his lyrics.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting, too, because it seems like it's not intentionally straightforward. It just seems like that's all he can write. Mm-hmm. Because, like, there's a quote from Chief Keef that's something along the lines of, you know, I'm paraphrasing because I don't want to Google the exact quote, but it's like, I could write all the metaphors, I could do stuff like that, but I don't want to. Enough people do that. I just want to write about what I've lived through. Nobody writes about what I've lived through. And like Fred Durst does not seem like that. Fred Durst just seems like that's all he can write. You know what I mean? Like he doesn't seem like he's trying to make an effort to make anything that's like super raw or visceral. In fact, the opposite. Fred Durst seems like he's trying to make something sound more intelligent than it actually is.
That's what I was thinking. I mean, I haven't heard that song you were referring to, but anybody who has to add "just think about it" to anything, four brain cells.
I think Brandy, you bring up a good point of like, you know, if he had been wronged by somebody else besides like, you know, like a cishet woman, like how would that affect what he writes? Like, would he become, you know, violently homophobic? Would he become violently transphobic, et cetera, racist, you know? But because I don't think he ever really had those problems before. And I think that he's very way of like, the only problems that exist are those that affect me and make my life kind of somewhat worse.
Yeah. This makes me wonder, like, have any of you guys seen any of his films since he's been a director since, like, I don't know, 2006? He has a couple of movies out.
I watched the short. I haven't watched any, like, full. Does he have any, like, feature lengths?
I'm so sorry.
No, you're good. His film with John Travolta came out last year. And I believe it's a full length.
I forgot about that. I meant to watch that when it came out and I didn't, and then I just completely forgot about it, to be honest.
Yeah, I just wonder what his, you know, Fred Durst vision, like how it translates to film. Like, I mean, I don't know, maybe that's where he gets his you know, his metaphors and imagery out.
Yeah.
I will say, like, Brandy, you said you watched a couple of the music videos, right?
I revisited some today. I watched Stuck and Sour.
Yeah, he directs all the music videos, and honestly, they're pretty good.
I didn't end up watching the Counterfeit music video that Jay told me to watch, and I regret that because I now I really want to see it. But I still plan on seeing it.
I do think he has talent behind the camera. It's just he should definitely let somebody else write the fucking script.
Absolutely.
Crazy. I feel like I had a thought, but it has gone into the ether.
So. That's the whole podcast.
Yeah. Brandy was talking, and then she said something, and then I was like, oh, I have something to say. And now I don't have anything to say.
I have something. I'm just going to throw this out there. How much do you think Fred Durst hates women if their tour for this album was called Ladies Night in Cambodia and they allowed the first 200 women free admission?
Oh, I'm gonna say this. Fred Durst was just trying to fuck.
I did not know that they did that until today during research.
I actually didn't know that either at all.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he noticed like way too many dudes, so they decided to offer free admission for the ladies.
That's so great. I love that.
The Democrat.
Oh, I think that was one of the things that I was thinking about, not right now, but like as I was listening to this, was they're probably like woke now, right?
Fred Durst is pretty quiet. He doesn't really do anything. He has a jazz night in LA. They're not outspoken at all, though. Well, at least Fred Durst and Wes Borland aren't. I don't know about the other members. Those are the only two that I kind of follow and keep track of.
Can you guys come here and can we all go to the jazz night, please?
That would be so fun. Like, once it's safe, I would love to go to Fred Durst jazz night.
I would love to.
Fred Durst bucket list.
Absolutely.
I did read that he, at least in 2016, he was vegan.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. That's not something I really expected from Fred Durst, I'm gonna be honest.
Yeah, but he's probably one of those vegans that like really rides. I don't know if it was for animal rights, he didn't really specify, but if he is still vegan, I imagine he'd be one of those who like really fights hard for animal rights, but, like, doesn't give a fuck about human beings.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah,
I don't understand those people. I mean, I do, but I don't. But yeah, that's exactly what I pictured as well. Like, that's what I meant by, like, based on their lyrics, where they didn't hit on, where they weren't racist or transphobic or homophobic, I was like, oh, I bet they're, like, woke now, like, liberals, you know?
Yeah.
Which is really sad, by the way, when you can listen to an album where they, like, call a woman every word in the dictionary, and then you're like, huh, I bet they're kind of progressive now.
Right, no, exactly. Like, that's absolutely how it fucking goes, though.
I do think we should do a Patreon only. Eventually, we'll start this Patreon that we keep joking about, but one where we only talk about Fred Durst feature length film.
Yes.
That's, we'll like have like a video set up and like do one where we both watch it at the same time.
Yes.
And we just comment on it. No, Fred Durst does seem like, I mean, he is kind of like, it is kind of like the Democratic Party, right? Of like, they can hate on us all they want, but at the end of the day, we're just like, it is what it is.
So sad. Oh, Stuck, at the end of Stuck, did you get a Beastie Boy? Does anybody get a Beastie Boys influence from that, or is it just me? Yes.
Oh, they're 100% Beastie Boys influence, mm-hmm. I think.
It makes me really upset because a lot of white people felt empowered by the Beastie Boys, and that was the wrong message. The message should have been the Beastie Boys are the only white men cool enough to do this.
Honestly, yeah. Well, I mean, corn raps sometimes.
Which I enjoy, but it's not cool.
That's an important distinction to make, yeah.
That is true, because Korn is not a cool band. I think I mentioned it on the Linkin Park episode. I got made fun of for Korn too. Yeah, no, it's really fascinating to me how much kind of how listening to the lyrics of this album, it's very fascinating how Fred Durst has no problems except for feeling like somebody ripped off his music and that he's mad that somebody didn't date him. Like, everything else about his life is fine.
Oh, man. The dream!
Which I also think is, like, worth talking about because it's very, very different from the other albums that we've covered, where I think that, you know, obviously Rage Against the Machine had very, very, like, prevalent social issues that they were talking about. And then Linkin Park and Deftones and God, who was the second band that we covered?
System.
Oh, yeah. Well, and also System is very much in line with Rage in terms of having actual things to talk about. But, like, Linkin Park and System and, yeah, but and Deftones, like, all had, like, actual, like, they talked about, like, actual, like, problems in their, like, personal lives, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is the first album that I feel like there's just, like, none of the anger is actually justified that we've talked about.
And it doesn't connect with me at all.
Like, I enjoy this album because it's fun and, like, the riffs are good and everything, but, like, I can't relate to a single lyric on this album.
No, definitely not.
Whereas, like, I mean, you know, Linkin Park, I think we talked about, we made a joke about them kind of, or I made a joke about, like, kind of having, like, generic lyrics on how that's not true because, like, they wrote things that are better than anything, like, you know, I could write. I could write everything that Limp Bizkit wrote.
What's interesting to me is that, oh fuck, I lost my train of thought again. Oh, what I was going to say is I don't think that by any stretch of the imagination, Fred Durst has never had a real problem. It's just weird that, like, it, as a musician, and that's how you synthesize, well, most musicians, I feel like that's how they synthesize their problems. Like, what does he do? Because there, I mean, even the most charmed life on the planet has personal loss, personal tragedy. Yeah. And so it just makes me wonder, like, if you're not channeling it into your music, like, how do you deal with that stuff as a musician? But then again, like we've discussed, he's not really a musician in a way, right? Like, that's not his main medium of expression.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting point about the other nu metal artists, and I especially think of Korn because Jonathan Davis writes about incredibly personal family trauma and is very, you know, very upfront and honest about it. And yeah, I just don't think, I mean, you know, none of us can say for sure, but it really, based on Fred Durst, like, you know, discography and his body of work, like, it just really doesn't seem like he's ever faced a real problem. And if he has, like, he has internalized it and, like, I don't know, repressed it, dismissed it, whatever. Because it certainly doesn't show in any of Limp Bizkit's music.
Yeah, I heard Korn and it brought me back to life.
Yeah.
No, because absolutely, Brandy, what you're talking about is completely true. And, like, I didn't mean to sound, like, so flippant when I said, like, Fred Durst has never had a problem in his life. Because, like, like Jazz, like, exactly what you said. Like, a lot of people go through, you know, no matter how privileged they are, people go through, you know, personal loss and stuff like that. But, exactly what Brandy was saying, like, we compare this to a band like Korn or like Kitty or, you know, System of a Down or something like that, that I'll talk about, like, their very personal experiences with loss and pain and stuff like that. And the anger that brings them. I mean, you know, like, you know, content warning for anybody listening, but, like, you know, like Jonathan Davis talks about, you know, like being, like, assaulted as a child and also being, like, violently bullied as a child and stuff like that, in a way that, like, Fred Durst can never he can't put that into words the same way, because he hasn't had those kinds of problems. His biggest problem is truly, this woman doesn't want to date me anymore. And I think that's kind of like the big like separation between them. And like same with like, you know, like System of a Down. It's like, okay, like, you know, my family were victims of, not my, I'm saying like as System of a Down, like their families were victims of, you know, the Armenian Genocide and things like that. Or, you know, Linkin Park obviously struggles with mental health and things like that. But Fred Durst doesn't seem to have that same kind of connection.
I think that the staying power of all these other bands compared to like the cultural connotation of Limp Bizkit really kind of says the same thing we're saying, you know?
Yeah, no, and actually that's a great point to bring up too that I hadn't really considered, of the fact that like I could tell pretty much anybody that I like Linkin Park, System of a Down, Rage Against the Machine, or Deftones. And I don't think most people would bat an eye if I'm like, hey, I really like Limp Bizkit. People are going to be like, really?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, because that is like a good point, actually. And I mean, even the other new metal bands that people kind of joke about, none of them are universally hated the same way that Limp Bizkit is.
Yeah. He's very... Yeah. I can't even come up with the right, like, metaphor for the way that Limp Bizkit is viewed in comparison to the legacies of the other bands.
Which also is, like, kind of crazy to think about, because, I mean, at one point they did beat Britney Spears and... Backstreet Boys out for number one on the Billboard Top 100.
Yeah. it's like the pop of nu metal, I guess.
It is. No, it absolutely is. I mean, it's very different from everything that we've covered and probably almost everything that we will cover, because it wasn't... And also, it kind of makes the song Counterfeit funny, because this was a band that was actually riffing off of a genre that already existed. And they're yelling at other people for copying them. And it's like, aren't you doing the same fucking thing?
That's true. Yeah, I do want to revisit the cleverness of Fred Durst, though, because even though like his lyrics are obviously like outrightly misogynistic and there are no, you know, there's no poetry in anything that he says. It's very like stream of consciousness, whatever comes to mind, like that's what he's going to say. But he, in that same interview where he says that he's a vegan, I think it was in 2016, he talks about how his Red Tap Limp Bizkit frontman persona was very much like his Tyler Durden. So he says mm-hmm. that he's able to turn it off, which is very... Mm. Which is very interesting to me. I don't know if that's like a way to get out of, you know, their violence. Mm-hmm. But I do think they are, I think he can be pretty calculated. Like, I know that they wanted this album to be of shock value because they knew that that's what would sell. And I'm thinking about their Ozfest performance. I think it was in 98. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but they perform with a giant toilet on stage.
Yep.
Because yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. And they did that specifically to respond to the haters who said that they weren't good enough to tour with, you know, I forget who's on that tour, but basically that they weren't up to standards. And it was a big, you know,
I think
fuck
you. I think the tour was like, because that was the Ozfest performance, and I think on the thing there were other bands like Korn. I think Life of Agony was on there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Deftones was definitely there. System of a Down was definitely there. But yeah, it was like a whole, like, it was like basically like a best of like hardcore and nu metal like thing. But yeah, I think they're very like self-conscious, and also nobody owns like self-deprecation like Fred Durst does.
Right.
I mean, like they're very in tune with the fact that like they like I think kind of wanted everybody to hate them. Like they embraced it.
Oh yeah,
for sure.
I mean, like the okay, is this some kind of Freudian bullshit, or does the character on the cover of this album look like a cock and balls to anybody else?
Oh my god, let me look at it. I did not think about that at all.
Oh my god. But I don't know.
I will never look at this album cover the same.
Like, doesn't it though?
Now that you've said that, yes.
Like, I think that was probably part of it. Like, I honestly think that was intentional in a way.
Yeah, I definitely at no point, like, even as a latecomer into the whole Limp Bizkit lifestyle, I would say at no point do I think anything they do is an accident. I think they are very good at being exactly what, like, their image is what they chose, which is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and which I mean, isn't that what every artist wants?
For sure.
Yeah, and that's why I made the joke earlier about Fred Durst being like one of the smartest people in music. And like, I honestly think it's true because I think he's very, very calculated about everything that he does. Mm-hmm. I don't think that, like, exactly what you said, Jazz. I don't think anything is a fucking mistake in Limp Bizkit.
Okay. Top Limp Bizkit song for this album. Go.
Counterfeit.
Mm-hmm.
Counterfeit number one, absolutely.
Do you have a number two since we're all like set on Counterfeit being number one?
I mean, like, I'm gonna say the Leech demo is probably my number two. I take that back. It's the Faith cover.
Yeah, definitely. Same.
Yeah, I would have to agree.
And then the Leech demo, and then probably everything, the outro song. And then Pollution, I think.
I'm gonna be real, like, I'm gonna be so, so honest right now, and I'm really upset about this, but somewhere about halfway through the record, every time that I listen to it, I just, like, toned out.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, really, I'm going off of intro to,
probably, like, Stalemate.
Yeah, right around there, and then skipping down to the last song, because I, at like 6 minutes into the song, I was like, hey, this song's still going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Limp Bizkit is really guilty of making their songs way too damn long. Like, why does Limp Bizkit have their average, it looks like they have lots of 5 minute songs, 6 minute songs, like, there's no reason a Limp Bizkit song should be that long.
No, a Limp Bizkit song should be like 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes at the most.
Definitely.
But I did like I don't remember what the name of this one is. Nobody Likes Me, I think I like.
Nobody Loves Me, yeah.
That was a good one. I have like a hard time with Stuck because it's like 50% really cool and 50% really terrible.
Yeah.
But yeah, Counterfeit is very good. I'm not gonna lie. And I was like, wow, ahead of the curve on having masks on.
Counterfeit is one of the craziest like songs ever to me. Like, it's so fucking fun. And like that last verse into the last chorus is just absolutely nuts. It goes unbelievably hard. But no, they're a fun band, as problematic as they are.
I'm really looking forward to watching the Counterfeit video, and also just going on IMDb and figuring out what's going on there with Fred Durst.
Yeah, we really need to do bonus episodes of us watching fucking Fred Durst movies.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even know he was a director. Like, thank you, Brandy, for that.
I didn't know he had features.
Okay, so any last thoughts for tonight's episode?
I just want to reiterate that this album, as much shit as we talked about it, it is really, really fun to listen to. And honestly, the instruments on it are incredible. It's really just Fred Durst that ruins it.
Yeah, it's like, you know, this is a new metal podcast. Every album that we talk about, we're going to love.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You just got to start with that and then go from there, for our opinion.
We're always going to like pretty much everything until we cover, Disturbed, which I don't like. I'm going to put that out there before we get to there, because I feel like people are going to be mad at me for not liking Disturbed, but I don't like Disturbed.
We each get a hall pass. Mine is Incubus.
Yeah, you do hate Incubus.
Why does Incubus count as new metal?
That's my question.
Incubus is a whole band, doesn't, but Science is a new metal album.
Okay, that's fair. I don't like them at all either, Jazz. I'm with you.
Yes.
It's a good album. Also, I will say, what I was saying about Disturbed is true for 99% of their songs. Stricken is a perfect song. They wrote one song that's good, and it's almost a perfect song. So
I just don't agree. I love Disturbed, so I'm just
I have not spent much time with them, but I did see them live when I went to this festival called Mayhem. I saw Slipknot and Mastodon, and Disturbed was there, and I got to hear the ooh wah ah, ah live, and that was very fun. Life-changing, really.
Yeah. The thing that I hate about Disturbed, I only hate one thing about Disturbed, is that I want to say all their music videos are like cartoons, right? They're animated.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so based on the animation and based on the lead singer's voice, I always just assumed he was hot. And then I saw him and I was really upset.
Oh my God. Jazz, I don't think I've ever met a legitimate Disturbed fan.
I mean, I'm not a fan, but I like every song I've heard except for the cover of, what is that cover that they have?
Oh, no.
It's on The Sickness.
Sound of Silence or something like that.
It's another Sound of Silence. It is.
It's
yeah.
It's so bad that the first time I heard it, I thought I was having a stroke. I thought I was in an alternate reality because I worked at UPS. At the time, I was at UPS, and it was 2 o'clock in the morning. I want to say it was peak season. So I had gone home, taken a 2-hour nap, and then was back at work. And it was on K-Rock, which is our rock station out here. And it was 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And I fully thought I was hallucinating.
Oh my God.
So bad. I've never forgiven them for that.
No, Disturbed is not my thing, but we'll get to that when we do our episode about them, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of future episodes, what did we end up, did Korn win?
Korn won.
Yes!
I was going to ask you, do we want to do our namesake or do we want to go for Kitty? Either way, we are doing a truly good album next episode.
I feel like we owe it to everybody to finally get to Korn.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too. So our next episode will be Korn's self-titled album.
I'm very excited about this.
Everybody knows that I talk too much on the podcast as is. I'm going to talk a lot about this album.
You're we love listening to you talk. Everybody loves listening to you talk.
It's true.
I'm also going to put it out there because I know I have a couple friends who listen to this who are also trans. I'm going to talk about that a lot in relation to the song being trans. I'm going to talk about in relation to the song Faggot by Korn on this album. So there's going to be a lot of discussion about that. So if you don't want to listen to that, just heads up.
Yeah. We'll throw some trigger warning labels on it as well. And that'll be that.
And I'm also, really excited. Also, if anybody hasn't heard this album, I think this is the first time that we actually probably have to put a content warning on. Because, yeah, the song that I'm talking about, I'm going to talk about that a lot. And also the last song on that album is 15 minutes long and is about being, like, a self-made child. So, like, if you don't want to listen to that, like, we're going to talk about it a lot. Yeah, we're going to talk about it in the next episode. And as somebody who went through that, it can be a lot for me. So if you don't want to listen to us talk about it for a while, I understand. Because yeah, it's probably, it's honest to God, probably the most fucked up album that we'll cover, because like the rest of the albums that are disturbing that we'll cover are like disturbing because they're just like weird, like metal, like hateful shit. This is like the only one that we'll cover that's like actually like disturbing.
I would like to say that I think we should use the corn-fed fan base as a way to get one of our Confederate high schools in Jacksonville named after Fred Durst instead of, I don't know, Nathaniel B. Forrest or Robert E. Lee. started, like, let's do this.
I'm logging on to change.org right now.
I am 100% in fucking favor of this. Oh my God, that would be so funny.
I do want to add one last thing before we hop off. Number one, this is technically a listener supported podcast. So if you want to support us, you can by going to our Anchor page. And just shout out to Matt, who is our first official supporter. That was awesome. Thank you, Matt.
We are also going to make a Patreon sometime soon. So if you want to support us, I'm pretty sure they're free, right, Jazz?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll make one, because as long as it's not draining our bank accounts, if nobody subscribes, we'll make one. So, you know, if you want, we'll probably start doing some bonus episodes. We've talked about a couple on the podcast so far, and we'll actually figure them out. So yeah, once we figure that out, we'll put it on Twitter. Follow us at cornfedpod. You can also email us is it cornfedpod@gmail.com or cornfedpodcast?
I think it's cornfedpodcast@gmail.com. We are so official on this podcast.
Listen, we're a new metal podcast. Nobody cares. It adds to the charm.
It's just a podcast full of Virgos, guys.
Yeah, Sydney, also you can send me $5 on Venmo at Cayenne Rainwater. I really need another pack of cigarettes.
Boom! I would send you my pack of cigarettes because I'm trying not to finish it, but I think that's more expensive.
I think it is.
All right, this was awesome. Brandy, thank you so much.
To
bully you into coming on to our podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a fun first podcast experience. I will never be listening to this episode, so please take it easy on me.
Brandy, we're gonna make you come on another episode of one.
Yeah,
as long as it's not Incubus.
No, actually, that would be really funny. Can we make Brandy come on the Incubus podcast?
Yes, because Jay wants to do that one. So you and Jay can be pro Incubus, and me and Brandy will hold it down. Unlike fuck Incubus. Incubus is for babies.
Hell yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. We will see you soon.
Thank you, everyone.
All right, this was great.